I scream. Oh my God, get in here! Tom comes running into the kitchen, just in time to find me cowering by the sink. He follows the direction of my gaze, where a small gray mouse seems to be stuck in the space next to the refrigerator. A freaking mouse! Oh, he says. That mouse has been terrorizing me for the last month. I guess the glue paper I bought worked. I clasp my hand over my eyes. I can't look. It's so gross. It's just a mouse. I peek through my fingers just enough to see him smirking at me. Just go in the other room. I'll take care of it. I am happy to oblige. I dash back into the living room, trying not to think about that wriggling vermin on the floor of the kitchen. I wait at the dining table, holding my breath. I hear loud scuffling noises from the kitchen, and I try not to imagine Tom handling that mouse with his bare hands. I'm holding my breath when all of a sudden there's a loud bang, then a second one. A few minutes later, Tom emerges from the kitchen holding a handful of silverware. I hope he washed his hands. All taken care of, he says casually. I frown, wondering about the noise I heard. What did you do to the mouse? I put it in a bag and then smashed it with a hammer. I gasp. Smashed it with a hammer? For real? Yeah. How could you? That was a living creature. His jaw drops. Are you freaking serious? You were screaming you couldn't even look at it. I told you I was going to get rid of it, and I did. I didn't tell you that I was going to rehabilitate the mouse and make it my pet. Still, you didn't have to do that. That's awful. Well, what would you have preferred? You could have released it into the wild. He gapes at me. It was stuck on a piece of glue paper, and we're up 5 flights of stairs. How did you want me to do that exactly? I wring my hands together. What he did is bad enough, but I'm even more unsettled by the fact that he barely seems bothered by having to smash a living creature to death with a hammer. I don't know. I'll tell you what, next time I have a mouse stuck in a trap, you can go ahead and release it into the wild. He raises his eyebrows. Now can we eat this delicious meal I ordered? Fine. I suppose he has a point. But still, everybody knows that glue traps are inhumane. He could have gotten another type of trap that wouldn't have required him to kill the mouse. Maybe I'll buy him some more humane traps. I dig into the brown paper bag and discover that he has ordered chicken parmigiana for me and chicken piccata for himself. And lots of crusty rolls. As I slide into the seat across from him, the silverware glints in the overhead lighting. I notice the knife he placed on one side of the plate is larger than your standard steak knife. My God, what did you think I'd be cutting? I say as I pick it up. Well, it's a slab of chicken. You need a knife, right? Yes, but... I turn it to the side. Jesus, this is sharp. Most of my knives at home don't look sharp enough to cut through a piece of bread. Do you get these sharpened? Christ, no. He picks up his own knife to cut into his chicken. I just don't use them much, so they stay sharp. This knife is definitely making me wary. With my bleeding issues, I would probably lose a pint of blood if I cut myself with one of these. I'll have to be extra careful. As we dig into our food, I tell Tom all about my encounter with Kevin on Zoom. I try to play it down and make it into something almost comical, but by the end of the story, his face is bright red, almost purple. He looks absolutely furious. The nerve of that jackass, he growls. I should have called the police on him the first time. I knew he was trouble. His hand balls into a fist, and if Kevin were standing in front of us, I have no doubt Tom would be throwing a punch right now. You can't let him get away with this, Sydney. Unfortunately, I say, I don't know much about him. All I got from the Sinchap was his first name and a phony photo. So, there are other ways to find a person. It's not like this guy is some sort of criminal mastermind. Like what? Hire a private detective, Hell, I bet some high school kid who is good at hacking could figure out where he lives based on your Zoom session. Maybe. I'm not convinced it will be that easy to find Kevin. In any case, it's not what I want to think about right now, especially since it seems to be getting Tom so angry. Hey, I found out some interesting news the other day. What? I carefully slice another piece of chicken, attempting not to sever my finger in the process. Gretchen's boyfriend came to my apartment and showed me a ring he bought her. He's planning to ask her to marry him. Oh. Tom could not possibly look less enthusiastic. And why should he be excited? He has refused to meet Gretchen and Randy, so why would he care that they're getting married? That's great. I play with the spaghetti curled up in a pile on my plate. I suppose you're going to refuse to be my date to the wedding. Wedding? He raises his eyebrows. Sid, the guy hasn't even popped the question yet. These engagements last forever. I bet they won't get married for 2 more years. Do you really need me to make plans for 2 years in the future? This is essentially the reaction I'd expected from him, but it still irritates me. I don't need you to save a date, I say through my teeth. But it would be nice if you didn't look quite so panicked at the idea of going somewhere formal with me and actually meeting people that I know. I don't. You do. You know you do. So please don't make it worse by lying about it. Tom's brown eyes drop to his dinner. Look, I'm not saying you're wrong, okay? Okay. But there are things about me that you don't understand, that you could never understand. Try me. He drags his fork across his plate. His shoulders rise and fall, and it almost looks like he's mumbling to himself, except I'm not sure what he's saying. I like you, Sydney, he says. I like you a lot. I really, really do. But? It's so quiet in his apartment, I can hear his neighbor's cat begging for dinner. Tom rakes a shaking hand through his black hair. Okay, he finally says. Okay? He raises his eyes and a smile twitches at his lips. Okay, I'll be your date for the wedding, whenever it is. He's right. It probably won't end up being until some date in the faraway future. But still, it's nice to know he's willing. Maybe there really is a future between the two of us. Maybe someday we'll be getting an apartment together. This could be something. He could be the one. My eyes meet his across the table. God, he is really sexy. And now he's giving me that look, which makes it hard to think straight. He's not hungry for dinner anymore, and neither am I.
Chapter 50. Before. Tom. At some point, my mother's footsteps ascend the stairs, and then the door to her bedroom slams shut. I can't imagine what she must be thinking about me right now. She knew that spot on the sofa was blood. She hasn't asked me again to explain where her rug went. And she recognizes at this point that my father is not coming home for the night. Plus, I can't stop thinking about the way she looked at me before I went upstairs. She must strongly suspect I did something to my father. Does she think I'm responsible for what happened to Allison too? To Brandy? If she thinks that, I don't know why she's cleaning up the blood I left behind. She should be driving me to the police station herself. At about 10 o'clock, I sneak down to the living room, which is dark. I flick on one of the lights, then walk around the sofa to see what that spot looks like where my mother was scrubbing. The blood stain is a lot lighter than it was earlier, but it's definitely still there. She wasn't able to get it out, apparently. I'm sure there's enough there to analyze the fibers and figure out it's not paint. I'm sure they can figure out it's blood. But at least, it's not Allison's blood. My stomach growls loudly. I only ate about half my dinner, but even though my body seems to want food, I don't feel like eating. It's like I've permanently lost my appetite. All I can think about is Daisy. She told me on the phone that she's not allowed to talk to me anymore. And I'm betting her father is monitoring her phone. It's clear what the police chief thinks of me. Yet I'm not quite ready to let her go. I've spent my whole life in love with Daisy Driscoll. And now, just when I managed to win her over, she's being taken from me. It doesn't seem fair. I need to see her, even without her father's blessing. I cast a glance in the direction of my mother's bedroom upstairs. I'm sure she's in bed for the night. If I slip out, she'll never know. Before I can overthink it, I grab a hoodie from the closet and throw it on. I shove my keys and my phone into my pocket, and I slip out the back door, leaving it unlocked. Daisy's house is only a few blocks away from mine. I jog over there, the hood of my sweatshirt covering my hair. It's not much of a disguise, but it's better than nothing. If I'm lucky, her father will be out in the field or at the station. Daisy's bedroom is all the way in the back of her house. They don't have any cameras or security, because this isn't the sort of neighborhood where you need something like that, and it's not like anyone would break into a police officer's house. In any case, I'm able to go around the back without any trouble. I crane my neck to look up at the second floor windows, and I locate the familiar one with plastic bubble letters spelling out Daisy in different colors. The light is still on. Now I've got to get her attention. I pick up a couple of pebbles from the ground. I've got to be careful because I don't want to break her window, but I need to throw them hard enough to get her attention. I count to three, then I toss one of the smaller pebbles at the window. Bullseye. I wait for a moment, but I don't see any movement from the window. I pick out a second pebble and throw that one. Again, I hit my target. Finally, the shadows shift behind the glass. My breath catches when Daisy's pale face appears at the window. Daisy, I stage whisper. I need to talk to you. She shakes her head no. I lace my hands together, pleading with her. Come on, Daisy, please. Finally, her shoulders sag. She points to the back door, where she can slip out easily without anyone seeing her. I briefly entertain the thought that she might tell her parents I'm waiting for her so they can throw me out. But then, a minute later, the back door cracks open, and there she is, alone, her blonde hair gleaming in the moonlight, a sweater wrapped around her slim body. Daisy, I breathe. I can't help myself. I dash over to her and wrap my arms around her. But it quickly becomes obvious she doesn't want to be hugged. Her whole body has gone rigid. I pull away, frowning. Daisy, I say. When she looks up at me, there are tears glistening in her eyes. I told you I'm not allowed to talk to you anymore, Tom. I know, but my father thinks you killed Allison. She blinks up at me, and a single tear falls from her right eye. He thinks you killed Brandy, too. You and Slug together. I swallow hard. I knew the chief strongly suspected I was Brandy's secret boyfriend, and I guessed that I had become a chief suspect. But it's a blow to hear he shared those suspicions with Daisy. Slug was peeping at Brandy through her window, she adds. She caught him doing it. Did you know that? No. And she's not the first girl he's peeped at. A few others came forward, too. I didn't know any of that, although it explains why the chief was questioning Slug a second time. Christ, I can't believe Slug would do that. If I had known, I wouldn't have called him the other night when I was in trouble. I really opened a can of worms. I knew Slug was weird, but I had no idea what he was really like. I had no idea he could be dangerous. Daisy, I whisper, you can't possibly think that I would... I don't know what to think. She wipes her eyes with the back of her hand. I get a rush of sadness that I might never get to hold her hand again. And that's not all. It's not? What else could there be? How could it be any worse than her father, the chief of police, thinking that I'm a murderer? What is it? Tell me. She drops her voice an octave. The night Allison disappeared,
She called me.
Oh, no.
She told me she saw you and Slug together, she goes on. She said you two were stuffing something into your trunk, and it was really suspicious. She was freaking out, telling me I had to break up with you.
Oh, no.
Look, I say, Slug was at my house, and he was just borrowing some sports equipment and putting it in his trunk. It wasn't a big deal. She said there was blood on your hands.
Suddenly, I am very glad Allison is gone. Slug was right. She was a problem. Daisy, I take a deep breath. We've known each other forever, and I would never lie to you.
I love you. I would never hurt Allison, I swear on my life.
I study her face, watching to see if she buys it. She wants to believe it. She wants to believe me so badly.
Daisy, I say.
She blinks away another tear.
It doesn't matter if I believe it or not. My father still thinks you did it. Do you know how much trouble you're in?
Daisy. A light goes on upstairs in her house, and Daisy's body goes rigid.
I've got to get back upstairs. My parents will kill me if they see me with you.
No, this can't be the last time I see Daisy. It can't. I'll lose my freaking mind.
Will you meet me later tonight?
I ask desperately. She starts to shake her head, and I add,
please, Daisy.
She hesitates.
Okay. I can sneak out when my mom goes to bed. Meet me at 1 a.m. behind the Dairy Queen off Maple Street. It's always deserted over there.
She's willing to meet me. That means she doesn't think I'm a killer. Impulsively, I reach out and grab her. I press my lips against hers, and for a moment she resists, but then she melts into me like she always does. There is nothing better than kissing Daisy Driscoll. And then I feel the beating of her carotid artery under her jaw. I slide my finger against it, fascinated by the pulsations. I remember the way my father's blood spilled out from the gaping hole in his neck. I wonder what Daisy's blood would look like, spilling out of her throat. As our lips separate, a voice in the back of my head tells me that maybe it isn't such a great idea to meet up alone with Daisy in a deserted parking lot. That maybe I can't trust myself with her. That maybe Allison was right about me. And that if I really do care about her, I should let her go. But it's too late to back out now. Daisy hurries back into the house, and I watch the door swing shut, even though I need to get out of here while I still can. But kissing Daisy always makes my knees weak. I need a minute. Finally, I scuttle out of the backyard, moving quickly and quietly. I had been so intent on watching Daisy, I didn't know that somebody was watching me. Not until I come face to face with Slug.
Chapter 51. Present Day. Sydney. Tom and I ended up having a particularly sweaty session tonight, and although it's not his standard practice, as soon as we are spent, he informs me he's hitting the shower.
You made me work up a sweat, woman, he says, which makes me laugh. Want to join me?
No, I'm still recovering, I tease him, which in turn makes him laugh. I lie in Tom's queen-size bed while he hums classical music in the shower. It might be Beethoven, but I honestly have no idea. My body is still thrumming from what he did to me. Even if he never agreed to go to a wedding for the rest of our lives, I could never break up with him. I would miss this far too much. My phone, over on his bedside table, starts to ring. I glance over at the screen. My mother. She's been a little calmer now that I'm dating someone regularly, although I have expressed to her in as gentle a way as possible that things might not be working out with Tom. She did not take it well. If I am not married by 40, someone might have to euthanize her. I consider letting the call go to voicemail, but then I brace myself and pick it up. Hi, I say. I'm kind of busy right now. Oh. She doesn't seem to know what to make of that. Are you with Tom?
Yes. And how is that going? It's going okay. She can hear the strain in my voice. It's not going great. Maybe Tom and I aren't breaking up, but we're not getting married any time in the near future. The best I can hope for is a wedding date. You know, she says, I was in my Bible studies class the other day, and I was reminded of a very interesting story. Did you know that Sarah and Abraham gave birth to Isaac when she was 90 years old? I stare at the phone, astonished. Why are you telling me that? I'm just saying there's always hope. I am really not in the mood for this conversation. I have to go. Whatever happened to that tall, handsome police detective you were living with? Jake? I flinch. Why are you asking me about that? We've been broken up for years. I was just thinking Jake was so nice, and he really liked you, Sydney. Goodbye, Mom. I hang up on my mother. I'm so agitated by that irritating conversation that I don't quite manage to put the phone back on the bedside table, and it drops into the gap between the table and the bed. Great. I climb off the bed and crouch down next to the table. I reach my hand into the gap, feeling around for my phone. My fingers touch something that feels like the cold, smooth surface of the phone. But then there's also something else there, something that feels like velvety fabric. What's that? I grab both items and pull them out from the gap. Sure enough, the first item was indeed my phone. But the second one makes my heart drop into my stomach. It's a black scrunchie. What the hell is Tom doing with a scrunchie in his bedroom? It's not like I found some general evidence that another woman has been in here. That would be fine. Tom isn't a monk, after all, and clearly you don't develop that level of expertise by sleeping alone. But a scrunchie? Who wears a scrunchie in this day and age? Or should I say, who wears a scrunchie besides Bonnie? I had thought it was far too big a coincidence for Tom to be Bonnie's mystery boyfriend. But as I look down at this scrunchie, I realize I have underestimated him. All the pieces fit together. After all, was it such a coincidence? I met him 3 blocks away from our building, shortly after Bonnie had been escorted home by her beau. He's a doctor. And he had the strangest reaction when I started talking to him about Bonnie's murder. Not to mention that he might have given me a fake name when we first met. Was the truth staring me smack in the face all along? Was I blinded by Tom's good looks and my urgency to get married and have a child before age 90? But no, it's impossible. Tom isn't a killer. I'm even more sure of that than I am of the fact that Randy isn't a killer. Tom is a good guy. The best. Isn't he? I stand in the middle of the bedroom, looking down at the phone in my hands. I bring up my list of favorite contacts, and Tom is right there in the middle. I don't entirely know why, but before I can stop myself, I click on his name. I am rewarded with the sound of a phone ringing, but it's not coming from the phone on his dresser, which is lying silent. The sound is muffled, like the phone is in one of the drawers. I allow it to continue ringing. As Tom belts out Mozart in the shower, I cross the room to his dresser and start yanking open drawers. The first one just has a bunch of folded shirts in it. The second has pants. The third looks like it contains boxer shorts. But when I open it up, the ringing becomes less muffled. Bingo. I dig around in the drawer. It takes me about 10 seconds to find the phone hidden away at the bottom, with a call flashing on the screen, identified as simply S. A second later, the call goes to voicemail. I gingerly remove the phone from the drawer so I can examine it more closely. This is not a personal phone that Tom uses to talk to friends and family. This is a burner phone. Tom has been communicating with me on a burner phone. I flip open the disposable phone and discover it does not require a password, so I'm able to scroll through the calls and text messages. Every single call and text message on the phone is from me. This phone is solely for interacting with me. What the hell? I look over at the bathroom. The shower is still running strong. Tom tends to take long showers. I've got at least another 5 minutes, maybe longer if he decides to brush his teeth. I'm going to need every second of that time. I drop the burner phone back into the drawer and slam it shut. Wearing nothing but one of Tom's large t-shirts that he lets me wear when I spend the night, I dart into the living room. The dining table is still set up from our meal, although Tom blew out the candle before we headed to the bedroom. I look down at the utensils on the table, wondering if you could get a decent print off of them. I'm not certain. Then my gaze falls on Tom's water bottle. Perfect. I pick up the water bottle with my thumb and forefinger, trying my best to preserve any fingerprints he left on it. I left my purse on the coffee table in the living room, so I hurry over and gently drop the water bottle inside. It isn't until I've zipped my purse closed that I hear the voice from behind me. What do you think you're doing, Sydney? Chapter 52. I have made a terrible mistake. I should never have tried to take that water bottle. I should have just picked up my purse and made a run for it, even if all I'm wearing is a t-shirt and underwear. I made the stupidest mistake that a woman can make. I didn't run when I had the chance. And now Tom is standing a few feet away from me in the living room, wearing an undershirt and boxer shorts, his black hair still shiny and wet from the shower. His eyes are dark and impassive. What? I ask.
I said, what are you doing?
Oh, I look down at my purse and manage a smile. I was just going to grab my phone.
Your phone is in the bedroom.
He's right. I left my phone on top of his dresser. I really, really wish I hadn't done that. If I hadn't, I would be calling 911 right now. Instead, I manage a laugh. It sort of sounds like I'm being strangled. I didn't see it, I guess, I say. I'll go grab it then.
Tom's eyes narrow. Are you okay?
I cannot let on that I suspect anything about him, because if he realizes I've caught on, well, we know what happened to Bonnie. Maybe this is why he finally killed her. Of course. Why wouldn't I be okay? He doesn't answer. He just keeps staring at me. Actually, I say, the truth is, I'm not feeling so hot.
What's wrong?
I dredge up the excuse that makes most men overly eager to send me on my way. I just got my period. But Tom doesn't seem the least bit thrown by that revelation. I guess that shouldn't surprise me.
I've got some ibuprofen in my medicine cabinet, if you need it.
Yeah, I rub the general area where I'm pretty sure my uterus is. I would rather just head out. I'd rather be in my own space. Tom is quiet. In a movie? This would be the moment when the bad guy realizes that I have caught on to him and that he can't let me leave. At least, not alive. I watch the wheels turning in his brain. Tom is an extremely smart man. He's got to figure it out. And then another terrible thought occurs to me. Where did I leave the scrunchie? If I left it on the dresser next to my phone, the jig is up. He will recognize that I found a hair accessory belonging to a dead woman. And I will never leave this apartment. Damn it! Where did I leave that scrunchie?
You should stay, he says. It's late. You don't really want to go home in the middle of the night, do you?
I rub my abdomen again. I just feel better sleeping in my own bed.
You can have my bed to yourself, if you want. I'll sleep out on the couch.
No, I clear my throat. I would really rather just go home. His gaze drops to my purse. If he checks inside, I'm done. I can't explain to him why I stuffed an empty water bottle into my purse. Although I'm sure I would manage to come up with some sort of lame excuse. It's all about the scrunchie. If he saw it, I'm dead. If he didn't see it, I might get out of here alive. My heart is beating so hard, I'm astonished he can't hear it. But after a few seconds of contemplation, he steps aside.
Okay, he says agreeably. But at least let me call you an Uber.
I can't believe this. He's actually letting me leave. I go back to the bedroom with Tom at my heels. I'm suddenly certain the scrunchie will be right smack in the middle of the bed, and that when I turn back to look at Tom, he'll be holding a butcher knife, which he will then use to stab me to death. But the scrunchie isn't on the bed. Where the hell is it? It takes me a second to locate it. It's lying on the carpet next to the nightstand. But since the carpet is dark, the black scrunchie is difficult to see. Although it's certainly not impossible. I imagine his gaze falling on the black fabric, his forehead furrowing as he tries to figure out what it is, the recognition dawning on his face. I've got to get the hell out of here. Tom sits on the edge of the bed while I put my clothes back on. I'm certain he's going to notice the scrunchie at any moment, and my heart is pounding so hard my chest hurts. But then, while I'm slipping my shoes on, Tom disappears into the bathroom. I take the opportunity to quickly kick the scrunchie back under the nightstand. There. Now he'll never know that I know. Tom returns to the bedroom with a couple of pills in his palm. He holds them out to me, and I eye them with barely concealed suspicion. What's that? I ask. Ibuprofen. Right. I am not taking random pills handed to me by this man. I'm not a complete idiot. No, thanks. I'll be fine.
Are you sure? You look pretty uncomfortable.
I smile as convincingly as I can. Like I said, I just want to go home. My heart continues to pound in my chest as Tom escorts me to his door. He blocks my way as he leans in to give me a kiss goodbye, and it almost makes my skin crawl. It's a far cry from the kiss we had when I first arrived. Well, I say, goodbye.
Sure, I'll see you later.
His eyes spend a moment probing my face until I start to squirm.
When you're feeling better.
Yeah, right. If he lets me out of this apartment, I am never, ever coming back.
Do you want me to walk you downstairs? He asks.
He's still blocking the door, and all I want is for him to move so that I can get the hell out of here. No, no, I laugh, trying to sound casual, even though it's the most fake laugh I've ever heard. I don't want you to have to go up and down 5 flights of stairs. I'll be fine. It's really not that late, and I'll call my own Uber.
You sure?
Definitely.
Because I don't mind.
Oh, God, is he ever going to let me leave? Really, I just want to be alone. Finally, finally, Tom turns to unlock his door, and I step outside. I'm convinced that at any moment, he's going to pull me back inside and wrap his fingers around my neck, or smash my skull open with a hammer like he did to the mouse. But he doesn't do any of that. He simply closes the door behind me and locks it. And that's that. I make it all the way to the stairwell before I start running. Chapter 53. During the entire ride from Tom's apartment, I'm certain that when I get home, he's going to be waiting for me in front of my building with a butcher knife hidden under his coat, ready to slash my throat. But he isn't. I get up the stairs as quickly as I can, then I lock the door to my apartment, as well as the deadbolt. And then I stuff a chair under the doorknob. I don't know if it will make any difference at all, but it makes me feel better at least. All of the shades are already drawn, thanks to real Kevin. Then I go to my bedroom, where I toss and turn for the next several hours. I manage to wait until 6:30 in the morning before I shoot off a text message to Jake. I recall he was always an early riser, so I've got my fingers crossed he will get the message and I can talk to him before I lose my mind. I need to talk to you in person as soon as possible. I can meet you wherever you want. Almost instantly, a reply from Jake pops up on my screen.
I can be at your house in half an hour.
20 minutes later, the sound of my doorbell ringing nearly makes me jump out of my skin. Even though it's almost certainly Jake at the door, I grab a knife from the kitchen and bring it with me while I check the peephole. Sure enough, Jake is standing there in a crumpled white dress shirt and trench coat, the trademark stubble on his chin. When I open the door, his tall, broad frame fills the doorway. He looks down at the knife in my right hand, and his eyes widen.
Sid, what's going on?
I pull him inside by the arm and lock the door behind him. Then I hurry over to the coffee table and pick up the freezer bag lying on top of it. Inside is the water bottle I took from Tom's apartment. I need you to check this for fingerprints, I tell him.
Okay. Why?
I take a deep breath. I want to see if it matches up with the unidentified prints found in Bonnie's apartment. Jake takes the freezer bag out of my hand. He looks down at the water bottle inside.
Where did you get this?
I have to tell him the whole story, but I really don't want to. It's humiliating to admit that the guy I've been dating could be a serial killer. Not that Jake is particularly judgmental, but he will judge me for that. I don't blame him. So I don't want to deal with having to tell him unless it's true. Can you just... I squeeze my fists together. Can you just run the prints, please?
No. He shoots me a look. Sydney, I want to help you, but you handing me a water bottle and expecting me to check for prints without even telling me why? That's not a reasonable thing to ask.
He folds his muscular forearms across his chest.
I'm not leaving this apartment until you tell me what this is all about.
It's not an unfair request. The truth is, I would have been stunned if he'd done it without that information. But now I have to tell him everything. The prints belong to a man named Thomas Brewer, I say.
Okay, and why do you think Thomas Brewer killed Bonnie?
I have to tell him. There's no way around it. Because I've been dating him, and I found some of her belongings in his apartment. Jake's face blanches.
Are you serious?
I nod slowly.
You're dating a guy you think is a serial killer. Is that what you're trying to tell me?
My face burns. Look, he seemed like a really nice guy. He's a doctor. Well, a pathologist who cuts dead people up for a living.
Thomas Brewer.
He frowns.
Wait, that's not Dr. Brewer, the medical examiner?
I nod again.
Holy shit.
He shakes his head.
I've met him before. He's a really smart guy. A hell of a medical examiner. He didn't seem like a creep. You really think he could have done this?
I do. I bite down on my lower lip. Honestly, I barely got out of his apartment last night.
Are you kidding me?
No. I was really scared he was going to, you know... Jake looks dazed as he pushes past me and drops down onto my sofa. He is still holding the freezer bag with the water bottle in it, and he stares down at it, his eyes glassy.
So you're saying you could have ended up like Bonnie?
Well, I sit down next to him. I didn't. I got away.
You should have called me right away.
It's fine. I got out. I didn't want to bother you in the middle of the night.
Are you joking?
His dark eyes are flashing.
Sydney, please bother me in the middle of the night, okay?
Okay, I just...
How could you put yourself in danger like that? He could have killed you, for Christ's sake!
The outburst renders me temporarily silent. Jake doesn't yell much, but when he does, it's loud enough to make the whole room shake. Jake drops the freezer bag on my coffee table and then buries his face in his palms.
Jesus, Sid.
Jake.
If he had done anything to hurt you,
he says in a low growl as he lifts his face from his hands,
I would have slit his throat.
I suck in a breath. Jake has always seemed utterly in control of his emotions, but I've never seen him like this. With his face bright red and a vein pulsating in his temple. He's the kind of cop who always does everything by the book, and certainly not the kind of cop who would exact vigilante justice on a man who attacked a girl he used to date. Maybe he's changed. Jake has to take a few deep breaths to get his emotions under control. The color in his face finally returns to normal and his shoulders relax.
Okay, he says. I'm going to run the water bottle for Prince. And in the meantime, I'm going to have a patrol car sit outside your building.
You don't have to do that.
Don't you dare say no.
The crease between his eyes deepens.
Sid, I'm not going to let anything happen to you. If that psychopath got to you, I would never be able to forgive myself. Especially since...
He drops his eyes.
Especially since if I hadn't been an idiot and had treated you right, you wouldn't be in this situation to begin with.
We sit there on my sofa for a moment, staring at each other. I can't say he's wrong. The past is the past. You can't change it.
Sometimes you can make it right, though.
I'm not sure what he means by that, and he doesn't elaborate. He picks up the freezer bag from the coffee table and promises that he'll let me know as soon as they have the results. I don't know how long it takes to run fingerprints, but I don't think it will be long.
Chapter 54. Before. Tom.
Slug has been watching me. I don't know how long he's been standing there, but he definitely heard at least part of my conversation with Daisy, and he doesn't look happy. I can't believe you got Daisy to meet you, he says. She must really be wild about you. I look up at Slug. When we were little, we used to be the same height, but in the last couple of years he shot up so that he's a lot taller than me. That said, in a fight, I might be able to take him. He's so skinny, it looks like a strong breeze could carry him away. Of course, if he has a weapon, that changes everything. But I don't want to fight Slug. In spite of everything, he's my best friend. When we were in grade school, nobody wanted to hang out with either one of us. Slug was more obviously weird and creepy, but I had trouble making friends too. For some reason, I couldn't relate to the other kids. Whenever I talked to them, I felt awkward. I wasn't like that around Slug, though. We were outcasts together. He never judged me about my alcoholic dad, and I never made fun of him for eating bugs or the fact that his parents were as old as most grandparents. Most years, when we had birthday parties, it was just him and me. Nobody else used to show up, even when we passed out invitations to the whole class. I wonder if Slug and I will celebrate our next birthdays together. Somehow, I don't think we will. Are you following me? I ask him. What if I am? He grunts. That's a shitty thing to do. I push past him out of the Driscolls' backyard. Whatever else, I can't be caught back here. That wouldn't be good for either of us. Slug doesn't make any moves to stop me, and in fact, falls into step next to me. Allison, talk to her, he points out. Damn, he heard our conversation. I'd been hoping he didn't. It's fine. I explained it all to her. And you think she believed it? Yes. You mean the way Allison believed it when we told her we had hamburger meat in the trunk? I don't have anything to say to that. Daisy is a problem, he says. I shiver. It's the same thing he said about Allison just hours before she was murdered. She's not a problem, I say. I'm going to handle it. Right. The same way you handled Allison. I don't like his sarcasm. He doesn't know for sure Allison would have turned us in, and the way he handled things made it all much, much worse. Look, I'm going to talk to her. It'll be fine. Slug's angular features look almost skeletal in the moonlight. Right. Whatever you say. Slug, I say firmly, I want you to stay away from Daisy, okay? Will you do that? His jaw tightens. You're my best friend, Tom, but I'm not going to jail because you can't manage to do what needs to be done. With those words, Slug stalks off, leaving me alone on the street.
Chapter 55. present day. Sydney. I take a quick shower after Jake leaves, but I can't focus on much. I really should be working, but that would be an impossible task. I mostly just pace across the living room. A few hours after Jake left, my phone starts ringing. His name appears on the screen, and I snatch it up. Well, I say,
it's a match.
For a second, it feels like the walls are closing in around me. I just barely make it over to my sofa, where I sit down just before my legs give out under me. What did he match with?
His prints matched with some unidentified ones that we found at Bonnie's apartment, and also at the apartment of the other girl who was killed before her. He was definitely in both of their apartments.
I can't believe it.
You can't? You're the one who brought me the water bottle.
He's right. I was the one who was suspicious of Tom. But in my heart, I was thinking it was nothing but paranoia. After all, how could my boyfriend have killed all those girls? And if I hadn't discovered that scrunchie, would I have been next? So what now? I ask. Are you going to arrest him? Jake snorts.
Based on a water bottle that you handed me? I don't think so. But we're going to try to bring him in for questioning. Hopefully he will cooperate. Once we actually fingerprint him and match that up, then we're in business. Although it still might be tricky to get an arrest warrant. We'll see.
Of course, I was hoping Jake would tell me that he was going to bring Tom in and throw him in jail immediately. But that obviously isn't how things work. The thought of Tom being set free after they've questioned him is terrifying. I have to believe that if there's enough evidence, they're not going to let him leave. But if there isn't enough evidence, if he does get released, then what? Will he know I was the one who turned him in? Will he want to get revenge? Is the police car outside my building? I ask.
It is,
he confirms.
And if the department doesn't want to allow it anymore, I'll get in my car and sit out there myself. Don't worry. I'm not going to let him hurt you.
Yeah.
Sid, you okay?
I squeeze my eyes shut. I can't believe I was so stupid. I thought he was a great guy. I mean, yes, he wasn't perfect, but I had no idea.
Please don't beat yourself up,
Jake says.
I told you, I met Brewer myself. And honestly, I'm shocked. I liked the guy. It just shows you never know. These guys who are really charming and smart and good-looking can fool everyone.
I still feel stupid.
Would it make you feel better to know that it's because of you that we might be putting Bonnie's killer behind bars?
He's right. If I hadn't dated him, he would have just gotten away with it all. And now, because of me, Bonnie will finally have justice. Call me if you have any updates, I tell him.
I will if I can.
And now all that's left to do is wait. Chapter 56. I am driving myself completely out of my mind in the apartment waiting to hear from Jake, so I decide to walk over to the yoga studio. There's a 6 o'clock class, and I figure that will keep me occupied until dinner time. Not that I expect to have any sort of appetite. I attempted to choke down a sandwich for lunch, and I ate about a quarter of it. I called Gretchen to see if she wanted to join me, but she was busy with Randy. So it's just me walking by myself to the yoga studio. At least Tom is at the police station, probably behind bars, so I feel safe. Well, safe-ish. There are only about half a dozen women in the class today. I roll out my mat in the corner of the room and grab a few yoga blocks as well. Arlene comes into the classroom, her ponytail swinging behind her head. She smiles and gives me a big hello. Just you today? She asks. Just me. By the way, Arlene says, I wanted to tell you that I saw you with a young man on the street last week. He had black hair and he was very handsome. Thanks. She frowns. I hope it's not out of turn to say this, but he had a very dark aura around him. It was extremely unsettling for me. Well, that may have been because he killed a bunch of women. Huh. I tend to be very intuitive about this sort of thing, she says. I just think you should be very careful around this man. Where were you a few days ago, Arlene? Don't worry. He and I aren't seeing each other anymore. Oh, thank heavens. She clutches her narrow chest. I have to tell you the truth, Sydney. When I saw that man, I wanted to run over to you, grab you by the shoulders, and tell you to run away. Great. Even Arlene knew my boyfriend was a creep. The yoga class lasts a little over an hour. Usually I find the stretches very relaxing, but today my body doesn't want to cooperate. Every inch of me feels tight, and when we do the meditation at the end, my mind won't stop racing. What's going to happen to Tom now that the police are onto him? Will they end up arresting him today? Is he in jail right this moment? Will they search his apartment and find more evidence of those girls that he killed? Maybe a stash of the hair that he sliced off their scalps? When the class ends, I grab my purse and dig out my phone. My stomach fills with butterflies when I see a missed call from Jake. No, two missed calls. That's not a good sign. I click on his name to return the call, and almost instantly, he picks up the phone. Sydney, he says. Did you bring him in for questioning?
Yes, but...
Is he in jail? There's a long silence on the other line.
No, we had to let him go.
What? I cry. But you confirmed it, right? You fingerprinted him and it was a match, right?
It was a match, he confirms. But that's not evidence of wrongdoing. All it proves is that he was in their apartments at some point in the past.
But that's really suspicious. Couldn't you have...
He has an alibi, Sid.
I frown. An alibi?
For the night Bonnie was murdered. He has an airtight alibi for the entire night.
What? Are you sure? Maybe whoever gave him his alibi was lying.
He was working at the hospital the whole night, Jake says. Multiple people saw him there. There are cameras, too. It's rock solid. There's no way he could have killed her.
I am stunned. I was certain it had to be Tom. His fingerprints are in those girls' apartments. Even Arlene thought he had an evil aura. I guess it's good to know that I wasn't dating a murderer. But at the same time, I have even more questions. If Tom didn't kill those girls, who did? And why was he hiding his relationship with Bonnie? Why was he calling me from a burner phone? Somehow, even though he has an alibi, I'm not certain that Tom is innocent.
You okay, Sid?
Uh-huh. I swallow a lump in my throat. I don't know what to think anymore. You really don't think Tom killed those girls?
Like I said, he could not have done it. What he told us is that he's been dating a lot of women, and just by chance, he happened to have gone out with both of them.
And do you believe that?
I do, Sid.
So, I tug at a lock of my hair. If I told you I was going to go out with him again, you would be fine with that? Jake is silent for several beats on the other line.
No,
he finally says.
But not because I think he killed anybody.
I let that statement just sit there for a moment, because I don't know what to say.
Listen,
Jake is the first to break the silence.
Brewer isn't going to hurt you. Like I said before, he is a solid guy. I trust him. But I'll keep an eye on your building anyway, okay?
You don't have to do that.
Yes, I do.
I consider asking Jake if he'll come over to escort me back to my building from the yoga studio. But that would be ridiculous. Yes, it's now dark, but it isn't even that late. There are still people out on the street. I am perfectly safe walking home. Especially now that I know my boyfriend is definitely not a serial killer. Although, there is still a killer out there. Somewhere. I grab my coat, say goodbye to Arlene, and head out into the cold, dark night.
The temperature has dropped abruptly in the last couple of weeks, and winter is setting into the city. We might end up having snow for Christmas. When I get closer to my building, I see somebody sitting on the front steps. It's a man, and he looks familiar, even with a beanie stuffed on his head and wearing a coat. As I approach, the man stands up to look at me, and in the glow of the streetlights, I can clearly make out his face. It's Tom.
Chapter 57. Before. Tom.
As the clock ticks closer to 1 a.m, I lie awake in bed, staring at the ceiling, wondering if I'm making a terrible mistake. I love Daisy, and I want to see her more than anything. I want to explain to her that I would never do anything to hurt her, and that I want to be with her no matter what her father thinks of me. I want to try to convince her I'm a good guy, even though that might not be the truth. But the more I think about it, the more uneasy I feel. Because the truth is, I'm not a good guy. I killed somebody. And every time I look at Daisy, I have terrible thoughts. Yes, I want to kiss her. But I also want to do a lot of other things to her. Bad things. This won't end well for either of us. But there's another thought that keeps nagging at me. Slug heard my conversation with Daisy, which means he heard when and where we are meeting, and that if he doesn't trust me to take care of the situation with Daisy, he might take matters into his own hands. What if Daisy is in danger? I sit up straight in bed. I'm getting more worried with each passing minute. Slug has already done some terrible things, and the last task he needs to complete to ensure our freedom is to take care of the Daisy situation. I wish I could text her, but it doesn't look like any of my text messages to her have been read. I'm willing to bet her parents confiscated her phone, or blocked me. I can't risk texting her about our meeting. I look down at my watch. It's 12:30. It will take me 20 minutes to walk to the Dairy Queen, 15 if I sprint there. I could try taking the Chevy, but I'm worried the sound of the garage door opening would wake my mother, and then she'd keep me from leaving. Or worse, involve the police. And my bike has had a flat tire since the fall that I never got around to replacing. No, it's better to go on foot. If I leave now, I should make it before Daisy arrives. And if Slug is there, I can get rid of him. Or at least make sure he doesn't do anything stupid. I throw my hoodie sweatshirt back on and stuff my feet into a pair of sneakers. I am moving fast, but I've wasted another several minutes, and I'm definitely going to have to hurry to get there before Daisy does. I better check Daisy's house first. If she hasn't left yet, I can head her off at the pass. A lot depends on this. Maybe her life. I sprint over to Daisy's house as quickly as I can, cutting through a neighbor's yard to save a couple of extra minutes. I'm out of breath by the time I make it back to Daisy's, and I waste no time rounding the side of the house to get to the back door. The Driscoll house is silent. Daisy's parents are either asleep or her father is in the field. And more importantly, Daisy's window is dark. Damn, I missed her. This is bad. Worse, I sacrificed at least 5 minutes to make the detour to Daisy's house. 5 minutes I didn't have to spend. 5 minutes when something terrible could be happening. I better run. I run as fast as I can all the way to the Dairy Queen. By the halfway point, I am deeply regretting not taking my mother's Chevy. I'm so hot, I rip off the hoodie and wear it around my waist. And the worst part is, I don't think I'm even going to make it by 1. Daisy, please hang in there. Okay, I shouldn't panic. Maybe I'm overreacting. Maybe Slug isn't planning anything. Maybe Daisy is going to be fine. When I arrive at the Dairy Queen, Daisy's mother's Lincoln Continental is parked in the lot. Apparently, she was smarter than me and grabbed the car. And then my heart sinks when I see the car parked next to hers. It's Slug's Oldsmobile. Daisy is here, and so is Slug. And I can't see them anywhere. My t-shirt is soaked with sweat. I'm breathing hard from my run, but I can't afford to stop, even for a second. I have to make sure Daisy is okay. I walk around the side of the Dairy Queen to the back parking lot. My heart is pounding, and it's not entirely from my 15-minute run. I'm late, but only by about 2 minutes. Nothing could possibly have happened in 2 minutes. Could it? As I get closer to the back, I start to get even more nervous. Why is it so quiet back there? If both Daisy and Slug are together, shouldn't I hear some noise? Talking? Shouting? Something? No. Something is wrong. I'm sure of it. Daisy? I call out. Dead silence. My panic is mounting. It occurs to me that I should have brought some kind of weapon, although I don't know what. I could have grabbed a knife from the kitchen. Because if Slug is here, he sure as hell brought a weapon. And I might need a weapon of my own to defend her. And if he did anything to hurt her, I'll need it to kill him. When I finally round the corner of the Dairy Queen, I freeze in my tracks. Way at the other end of the small lot, I see a lump. As I get slightly closer, I realize it's a body, lying on the ground, not moving. And there's another person standing over the lifeless lump. I am far too late. Oh, Christ, Daisy.
Chapter 58. Present Day. Sydney. For a moment, I consider making a run for it. I don't want to talk to Tom, that's for sure. But where am I supposed to go? He's in front of the entrance to my building. Also, according to Jake, he's not a killer. So really, I should have nothing to be scared of. Except for the fact that I turned him into the police, and he probably knows it. Sydney, Tom says as he rises to his feet. We need to talk. My body goes rigid. Do we? You told the police that I killed a bunch of people, so yes, I think we do. I suck in a breath. I didn't. Detective Jake Souza is your ex, right? He arches an eyebrow. A cop named Jake. I figured that one out. I flinch. Fine, I told him. His shoulders sag now that he has confirmation. My God, Sydney. How could you think I did that? I don't know. I hug my arms to my chest, and not just because it's close to freezing out here. Maybe because you dated a girl who lived in my building who was murdered, and you never bothered to tell me. How about that? It wasn't that serious. You're lying. She told me it was getting serious. You told me yourself that you were at the tail end of a relationship. It wasn't serious, he insists. Bonnie and I were casual. Maybe we considered taking it to the next level, but not really. It's not like you and me. You and me? I burst out. Yeah, why don't we talk about that? What's going on between you and me anyway? How can you ask me that? You're my girlfriend. Am I? Then how come you only contact me on a burner phone? Tom opens his mouth, but no sound comes out. He doesn't have an answer for that one. Exactly, I say. Okay, fine. He shakes his head. I'm an idiot, and I have commitment issues, okay? But I'm working on it, because I really, really like you, Sid. And his brow creases. I don't want this to be over. I stare at Tom, standing in the street in front of the stairs to my building. Despite everything, I'm still desperately attracted to him. And Jake has reassured me that he is not a serial killer. But it doesn't matter. I can't continue dating Tom. I don't trust him. Maybe he didn't kill anyone, but there's something about him that's not right. He's been lying to me about too many things. I'd be an idiot to give him another chance. I'm sorry, I say. I don't think... Before I can find the right way to tell him that we are officially breaking up, a voice squeals from behind me. Sydney! Oh my God, Sid! Is that him? Is that Tom? Oh, great. It's Gretchen and Randy. I turn around and find the two of them coming toward us, Gretchen's hand clutching Randy's arm. She's got on a white puffball hat, and Randy is wearing a black trench coat. I can't believe that after all the time I've been trying to introduce Tom to Gretchen and Randy, it's finally about to happen when we are seconds away from breaking up. Hi, Gretchen chirps. You must be Tom. I'm Gretchen, and this is my boyfriend, Randy. I look over at Tom, wondering if he'll try to ingratiate himself with my friends in order to suck up to me. But instead, he's just standing there, frozen. He's staring at Randy, his face deathly pale.
Hey there, Randy raises a hand. Good to finally meet you, Tom.
Tom reaches out to hold on to the banister. He looks like he's about to be sick.
Hi.
He finally manages. Oh my gosh, Gretchen gushes. He's just as handsome as you said he is, Sid. Tom is still staring at Randy. It is the strangest thing. Does he think he recognizes him from somewhere?
Sydney.
Tom tries to grab my arm, but I shake him off.
Can I talk to you for a moment? Privately?
I glance over at Gretchen and Randy, who are giving me curious looks. I don't want to talk to Tom privately. I'm done with him, and there's no point in drawing this out. Actually, I say, I'm going to go inside. It's cold out.
Can I come in and talk to you?
Tom asks. I'd rather you didn't. I give him my coolest look, just in case he doesn't know where he stands. I don't think we have anything else to say to each other.
Sydney,
he's speaking through his teeth now as he grabs my arm.
I really need to talk to you. Now.
Despite everything else, Tom has always been a gentleman to me. But now that I'm ending things, I'm discovering a different side of him. He's never grabbed me this way. He's never refused to leave when I asked him. But to my surprise, it's Randy who steps between us, puffing up his chest. He is much scrawnier than Tom, but several inches taller.
Sydney says she doesn't want to speak to you right now, so I think you need to leave.
Tom glares up at Randy, venom in his eyes.
This really isn't any of your concern. I'm making it my concern.
The two of them are staring each other down. Finally, Randy takes a menacing step forward, and Tom releases my arm.
Fine.
His gaze darts between me and Randy.
Fine.
Gretchen puts her arm around my shoulders, pulling me close for comfort as we walk up the steps to the front door. Randy lingers behind for a few moments, still in that standoff with Tom. Finally, he follows behind us. And when he closes the door to the building, Tom is still standing there at the foot of the stairs.
Oh, sweetie, Gretchen cries. What happened out there? Are you okay?
My eyes well up with tears, but I don't want to cry in front of her and Randy.
I'm okay, I promise. You need to come inside with us, she says. I insist.
She looks at Randy for confirmation, and he nods.
You shouldn't be alone in your apartment with that guy hanging around outside. Come to our place for a bit.
I'll make dinner,
Gretchen says excitedly. They are right. I definitely don't want to be alone right now. Well, I say, okay. As Randy is unlocking the door to their first floor apartment, my phone buzzes in my purse. A text message. I pull it out, and a message is waiting for me on the screen. It's from Tom.
You need to get out of there right now.
And then the next message comes in.